Hi, guys. Welcome to Wholehearted Loving. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Georgiana. Hello.
Hello. So today, I think we're going to be talking about things we suck at. But first, we're going to do a body practice. G, will you say a few words about why we do these body practices before we begin?
Yeah. Okay. So many reasons, but one of them is to make time for yourself before you engage with other people and activities and spaces full of energy. Just give yourself a moment to arrive, right? So let's arrive first and then engage. Usually we just hop in and engage. When we do that, we have no idea what's going on with us, our bodies, our minds, what we need. So let's give ourselves a chance to arrive first and then engage. All right. I'll walk us through one that I really enjoy and you get to see whether you like it as well. So taking a moment to, again, find your anchoring spot, whether that's your feet touching something, the ground, or for me, it's my butt on the ottoman that I'm sitting on. So just find that body connection point and notice your breath. And this next piece is to take one of your hands and we're just going to give our head a little bit of gentle touch. We're going to take a hand and place it behind your head. So sort of cradling your skull and your neck, where your skull and your neck meet. And feel your hand there. And on the next exhale, see if you can really feel your head getting the opportunity to rest in your hand. Notice how that feels. Make any adjustments that you need. Then we're going to take the other hand and we're going to place it either on your forehead or like really where your forehead and your hairline meets. And notice your top hand on your forehead. Notice your breath. And see how that feels. And you might want to give your hands just a little squeeze so your head gets a little squeeze. Notice how that feels. And then we'll let the hands just rest wherever it feels good. If you want, you bring a gentle rubbing of the forehead, right where your forehead meets your hairline. A gentle rubbing, maybe your hands land somewhere else, that's good too. And then as always, have a little notice. Take a moment to notice how that feels. What kind of energy did you just create for yourself? What do you notice, Steph?
Well, I feel very soothed. It feels like cradling my head the way I'd cradle a baby's head. It feels really self-loving. And the forehead thing, this is a thing I do to soothe myself. And I didn't know that I did that until, again, years into doing this work and the noticing and the pattern noticing, I realized I had my hand on my forehead. Mm-hmm. And that reminded me of my grandma Vivian, who would often, mm-hmm. when something, the moment anything was amiss, her arm would go up like this on her hip and her hand would be here and she'd be saying, you know, oh dear, oh dear. And the moment I put that together, I was like, oh, I'm soothing myself and she was soothing herself. Mm-hmm. That means I need soothing in this moment. And I hadn't even realized it.
Mm-hmm. I love it. You touch on two things that are so important. And I love this practice. And I think it's because of the things you mentioned. So when we look at a baby and how we instinctively want to care for that baby, or at least not cause harm to that baby, we will cradle the baby's head because we know it's fragile. The neck muscles are not strong enough yet. right? So I think for most of us, assuming we had safe first, you know, few days, weeks, months in life, we were held like that. And so it's this real nurturing thing we get to re-experience,
mm-hmm.
right? And then the forehead, like I remember, like this is so soothing because I think, again, that's a thing that even if you know nothing about babies, I think instinctively, like we might rub their heads, you know, to soothe them. And we're just big babies.
We really
still
are.
Still need soothing. Right. Yeah. We forget because now we're big. We think we don't need soothing and we don't need help soothing. And that's just not true.
Yeah. You know, one of the ways I think that people achieve this in modern day without realizing it is going to estheticians and beauty salons and having manicures and pedicures and generally being tended to by somebody in a caring way. Yeah.
Yep. Touch, massage, all the things.
Yeah.
Right? It's really important. We need touch to survive and thrive. So bringing that into our lives.
I remember the first time I went to a salon, like for esthetician services. I'd been to get haircuts and stuff, but I'd never had, I can't even remember what it was, but it involved some massage and some touch that I was able to like access the love in that touch in a way that I hadn't been before. I can tend to be grossed out by human bodies. The idea of being an esthetician to me is just a horrifying nightmare. So I think I was kind of occupied in the thoughts of like, oh God, don't these women think this and that is gross? And like, how can they stand touching all these people? And then partway through that turned into like, oh my God, what a loving thing these women are doing. And I was able to receive that in a really nice way.
I love that.
Yeah.
That reminds me of, I really love getting my head massage, whether it's, you know, with my RMT and I have an amazing one, or with my hairdresser and she's amazing too, but I'm not going to see them every day or every week. And I remember like, I'm like, what if I just do those same motions that they do, that whenever I'm sitting in that chair or on that bed, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. Like, what if I just tried it? And of course, there's a bit of a different element because you're not fully in receiving mode, but it still feels better than nothing at all, like way better than nothing at all. Yeah. And I remember, I remember that realization. I'm like, oh, this is life changing. I can give myself that experience and sensation, at least some essence of it. And actually Matt, my RMT, my beloved RMT, we've been together for years. And I remember when we first met, he said something like that to me, like, you know, I always recommend self massage. And he said something about it and it like sort of registered, but not fully until years later, because I was so disconnected from my body and what I needed and what I needed for soothing, or that I needed soothing, or that soothing could come from me. Soothing's supposed to come from someone else, isn't it?
You're not supposed to need to be soothed now that you're not a baby. No more soothing.
Or that, right? And it wasn't until a few years later that I'm like, oh, that's what he meant.
Yeah.
That's why he's such an advocate for it, because we need touch.
We do. Yeah. Right. And movement, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're really locked in a lot of ways. Yeah. Okay. So one of the ways that you used to suck was not touching yourself enough. Is that what I'm hearing?
It's very true. Yes. Mm. I mean, one of the things I sucked at before was just saying that I sucked.
Yeah, I didn't suck at anything. For you.
That was so hard for me to admit that I wasn't good at something and not feel shame. Like I could say I sucked, but I would feel really awful about myself.
Yeah.
Or I would have a hard time just admitting it at all. Yeah. Right. So it was like one of those two places.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. And then I think we have this pendulum swing from being like, oh, maybe I don't suck and maybe I'm not the worst thing ever, to being like, I'm awesome. And then it's just this hollow sentence that we're saying till we hope it becomes true, you know?
Yeah.
It's already true.
Growing up, it was really, I got the messaging. I don't think it was my parents' intention, but I got the messaging. It's really not good to suck at things. And I've been over the years trying to give myself permission to like just not be good at things. Let that be okay and let that actually be fun. And I get inspired by my kids. So one day I was at the pool with boys, maybe a year and a half ago, I don't know. And they were trying to do handstands. I don't know, maybe I've talked about this, I can't remember. Did you ever try to do handstands in the pool as a kid?
Yeah.
That's a thing, right? Adults, and somersaults and handstands, right?
Yeah.
And so I think they tried to start with the somersaults, but then it just sort of went awry. And so we're like, they decided, let's try handstands. And because they're, you know, they like to be competitive, they make me the judge, or they ask me to be the judge. And they say, give us numbers out of 10.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I'm standing at the pool watching them do handstands, and I'm supposed to rate them, right? And so I'm rating. And then there's that, there's this old part of me that's so sensitive to hearing that I suck. That's like, well, I can't possibly tell someone else that they suck. Like, I better give you at least a 7, right? I don't want to crush your spirit if I give you anything less than a 7. But anyways, put that aside and just practice being honest.
And projecting about the number 7.
Also, yes, I have definite meanings about the number 7. Yeah. And 7 is not good enough. If you grew up in an Asian family, and I'm generalizing here, my experience, like 7 is bad. 7 out of 10 is bad, just so you know. And I remember Luca was doing them. And, you know, he got a few where we deemed it, you know, an 8 or an 8.5, maybe even a 9. And then one was just terrible. And I didn't say anything, but he popped up. And the first thing he said was, that was terrible. And there was a moment of joy and pride. And I was like, oh, look at that. This kid can just be like, yeah, that was terrible. And then what was even cooler for me to watch, because that was just definitely not how I was wired as a kid, he was like, let's go again. Let's try again, right? Because me as a kid would have been so self-conscious to have someone watching me, to have someone judging me, and then to look silly. Like, if it wasn't perfect, I would consider myself looking stupid, and I would not want that at all. And then that would immediately make me be like, oh, I'm tired now. I'm tired now. Right. I don't want to play this game anymore.
Yeah, my belly hurts all of a sudden.
Right? Yeah. Make some excuse to be done with it and to not try again because I didn't want to look stupid again.
Yeah.
And to see Luca be like, that was terrible and let's try again. That was so cool for me because I feel like so many people, so many of us are adults still learning that.
Yeah. And what a neat thing that you can see that, you know, as it's happening, you can see, wow, here are all the judgments I would have of myself. And I wouldn't even want to be in this situation. And here you are with your kids asking you to judge them and set up this silly thing where they're going to do a bunch of stuff they don't really know how to do well and whatever. It's totally different vibe for them than it is for you. But because you're paying attention, you can be there with them.
So different. And what was so like, there was, you know, so many elements of that that were fun to watch was I could see his joy in getting better, you know, and I could also see it didn't knock him off center in having a few in there that really sucked. And then when it got progressively better, like he was so ecstatic And like the fact that the three other ones really sucked didn't take away from that. Mm-hmm. And my old programming would have been, again, like, well, great, I got one that was pretty good, but those other three really sucked. And the mm-hmm. other three would be what I remember. And like yeah. right now we might be talking about handstands in a pool, but like really that was just my frame of mind and my way of being and thinking about all sorts of things.
Yeah. Funny. You know, I'm thinking about you and I are different responses to this. I mean, generally in life anyway, we have very different responses to things, which is why I think we have such a good balance here. Yeah. But if somebody came to me and they, you know, they were worrying that they were sucking about something, your response to that would be this really loving, open thing. Whereas I would get more like jokey and like, wow, you really are the worst person that's ever lived. How are you even surviving with such bad suck levels going on? Are you okay? And I'll get so like that with them that they start becoming protective of themselves in this like, okay, maybe I don't suck that bad kind of a way.
Different ways of loving on people.
Yeah, definitely. Very different. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been really just such a joy to watch them, like to see childhood through their eyes of like mm-hmm. sucking at things and trying them anyways, being scared and sucking and trying anyways, and then having such a sense of pride as they get better at things.
Right. Yeah. Because is it actually sucking to be learning?
Well, I never saw it as learning. I just saw it as sucking.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I've seen this thing. I should be able to do it. I haven't done it.
Other people can do it.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I had a huge, other people can do it. So.
Right.
I can't.
What about the things mm-hmm. other people can't? I remember this was a long time ago. Elvis Stoiko, the figure skater, landed the first ever quadruple axel, and no mm-hmm. one had ever done that before. And now it's just a normal thing. Like we expand mm-hmm. our capacity. I think this is part of the collective consciousness too. We expand our capacity as individuals, and that grows it for everybody.
Yeah. I'm never going to do a quadruple axel. I'm just trying to stay on my skates.
Yep. Suck at that too, do you? Jeez.
Just a little. Hey.
Get out of here.
I don't suck that bad.
I also suck it. And I've actually taken figure skating. Like I was a figure skater when I was 13. And now I suck at it. And you know, I probably sucked at it then too.
But did you have fun when you sucked at it?
I don't know. I liked a boy there, so probably that was enough for me to think it was fun.
That would have horrified me even more if I liked a boy there and I was terrible at it.
Oh, right.
That would not have been good.
Right. Yeah.
And I could see that just in my life too, past 13 years old, of like not wanting to do things around people who I liked or admired, because what if I couldn't do it? That wouldn't feel good. Right. Yeah. So really limiting myself and experience and self-expression and being seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some things that we suck at? I have trouble with this. So there's twofold for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty good at stuff. Generally,
you are really good at a lot of things.
That's true. And mm-hmm. also, if there was something I wasn't good at or knew I wouldn't be, I think I'd just avoid it. So I'm in a little bubble of my own creation here.
Mm-hmm. So are there things that looking back or just now that you know you would have liked to have tried if you were, you know what I mean? Like that you prevented yourself from trying because you're like, well, I'm assuming I'm not good at that, or I already know I'm not good, so I'm not even going to bother.
I'm not much of a not trier. Like I try things. There's things like I'm aware that I can't do a standing backflip, so I'm not going to try.
Right. Because you have no interest in being able to do it?
Well, I have a very passive, deep interest in being able to do it, but not in a way I'm going to do anything about.
A passive interest.
Yeah. Oh, I really would deeply want to be able to do a standing backflip.
Nice. Yeah, like when I think about it, there are so many things I didn't do because I was afraid to suck at it.
Tell me
like
more.
Like so many. And they'll just be random. So playing volleyball. Uh-huh. I remember in elementary school, everyone seemed already good. Like they even knew what this sport was. I was like, what is this? I don't even know what this game is. Mm. Right. And I think, I don't know what grade we would have started playing that. Grade 4, 5, 6. But it had been ingrained in me already that, like, do not suck in front of people. That is not good. Right. So, like, I remember in gym class, like, trying to sort of hide, you know? And definitely when they said, oh, there's going to be a volleyball team, you can join the volleyball team. I could feel the part of me that wanted to, mm-hmm. but the part of me that didn't want to suck, it felt way bigger. So then I didn't. And then I would just tell myself, I didn't want to anyways. Right? I don't want to do that. And I just wouldn't. Or, you know, over time it accumulated to be like, oh, I'm not athletic. I'm one of the smart kids, but I'm not athletic. You're and it's funny athletic. Because that's the thing. It's like people that I meet now in the last decade, they're like, you're super sporty and athletic. I'm like, what do you mean? You know, like I see that now, but there was a period of time when I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see myself as that. I've always seen myself as like, gosh, I'm really athletically challenged.
Man.
I was the last person that got picked at gym class to be on teams.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's a big one. That's a big feeling. We make that mean a lot of things.
Yeah. And I had asthma, and so I couldn't run. And so, like, I actually wasn't very good. And also wasn't – believed myself to be not very coordinated. And actually, I think I wasn't very coordinated. But I realized, like, I have pretty good – it's decent hand-eye. What it was more was panic. Panic of messing up.
Yeah.
It wasn't that I wasn't coordinated. I was just so scared of screwing up that right. I would screw up because I couldn't focus. I wasn't like connected to my body. I wasn't actually seeing the thing in front of my face.
Yeah. What another great example of how fear and anxiety blocks us.
Mm-hmm. And so I remember years later after, you know, I think in podcast episode 1, I talk about this really tough breakup for me. And that was a real catalyst for me to begin really living, to like reclaim parts of myself I didn't let myself discover and be. And so one of the things I did was, I'm like, I'm going to sign up for volleyball lessons.
Oh, nice.
So I did. And it was super fun. And that's I still awesome. Think that I suck at it. Like I'm not very good, but I like it. I think it's fun. And that's what I've really embraced about myself. I actually like doing a lot of things that I'm not very good at and I don't have an intention to ever become masterful in. Mm. But I like them. When I'm doing them, I have fun. A smile comes on my face. And I never let myself do those things before.
That is so important.
Because I thought I have to master it. Yeah.
So many people are only doing things to master them, you know, and I can hear my mother's voice right now, you know, anything I might like to pick up. She's like, well, 10,000 hours to mastery. I'm like, well, forget it then. Just wanted to have a nice time.
1 hour to have fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And how many people? So, okay, I'm watching right now this show called Physical 100, which is a Korean reality show, like a physical challenge. It's 100 mm-hmm. strong people doing these physical challenges. And when you get knocked out of the competition, you hear what they say about themselves. And it's like, there's this woman who's like built like the Incredible Hulk. And she has a physical wrestling match to try to get a ball from this giant man who's also like, they're all just the most ripped people you've ever seen, right? And mm-hmm. she gets decimated by this guy. And then she has to go to the talking head scene at the end of it. And she's like, I will exercise for 10 more years. I'm obviously not good enough. I'm like, you're good enough. Oh my God. It's just, this is a crazy competition, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, those internal voices, old internal voices can be strong.
Yes.
Until we decide to practice shifting them. Yeah. So I also grew up in a home where I heard that voice of my, you know, my dad and mom never said anything about the 10,000 hours, but my dad said, if you're going to do something, do it well or don't bother.
Right.
And it was well-intentioned. And he is wired to be a master of things. Like, he really enjoys mastering things. So he... Mm-hmm. Before I was born, like, my dad's in his 70s now. I don't think he's missed a single day outside of time that he was like in a hospital bed. He does Tai Chi every morning and he has mastered it. And like, mastery level is like what he goes for. And this is a man who could build you a house from random junk. Like, he's mastered the art of building things. And my mom, at least what I saw of her, was very different. She seemed to like to dabble, like she would have an interest in many different things and never really have a need to master anything. Mm-hmm. And I think she just enjoyed doing the thing for a while until something else, you know, popped in and was interesting. And I remember my dad being so critical of that. Of like, why are you wasting your time? Or like, what's the point of having a hobby if it doesn't make you any money? Like, it like those kinds, or it doesn't add to your health. Like, he was very adamant about those things. And I think I picked that up as seeing hobbies as a waste of time. Mm-hmm. If you can't master it, don't bother. You're wasting all these hours shifting from hobby to hobby. Whereas you could have just chosen one and become masterful at it. And I think I took that way too seriously and literally. Mm-hmm. And so there were so many things I didn't pursue because I had no interest in mastering them, and I wasn't interested in them long enough to give myself time. Like, well, something that I really love about myself is I get very excitable about things and different things. And I like novelty and like to try different things. Now, I discovered now that I like to try different things. I didn't let that part of me lead as a child and as a younger person. And that just wasn't encouraged growing up. And so it's been really fun going to volleyball lessons and going to tennis lessons and like never needing to be good at it, but just want to enjoy it.
Great. Yeah. The experiences of life. That's amazing. Yeah. That's something, you know, I used to call it sucking. I used to think I sucked at being consistent, like professionally. I really like to learn a thing, go deep in a thing, become good at a thing, and then move on to something else, you know? And learning to accept that as my way, you know, I'm not a person who wants to wake up and have a schedule and do the same thing every day. And the idea of doing the same anything all the time, other than like breathing, feels like a prison to me. And I remember my mom saying at some point that she was being hard on herself because she likes to flip from thing to thing. And just what I was saying, like, suck at consistency or whatever. But hearing her judge herself about that, it just was so clear. It's like, oh no, that's just your way. Like, that's great. That's your way. That's also my way. I really want people to trust, like, just try on the idea that the way you want to do things is just fine.
Yeah, that's so big, right? I think that helps me in relationships with people too. I mean, I know it helps me with relationships because I'm not coming from that place of my way is the only right way. Right. And I am masterful at things, certain things, things that, you know, I want to be masterful at. I invest the time to learn and grow those skills. But I think I told myself, oh, like you said, I'm not committed, enough. Apparently,
right.
I'm not dedicated enough.
Suck.
I'm not focused enough, but that's not true. Cause there's other things in life that I'm very committed to and I'm committed to like keep practicing and keep learning. That's just not how I want to be with everything.
Yeah, totally.
And, it's been really fun. Mm. Also, there's a part of me that, I don't like having something that feels off limits to me by my own. Like I've put that limit there because I don't feel confident. Like that feeling feels gross to me. And one of those things was dancing. I remember dancing was mortifying for me. I'm like, I have no rhythm, cannot move that way. Can't remember any choreography. I just look like this like stick person. And one night I was like, you know what? I'm going to do something about this. I just don't like that this is one thing in life that I just feel so much discomfort around, right? I would be uncomfortable around dancing people. I'm like, oh God, you're going to want me to dance? And like, no, you know, it was just yuck feeling. And I don't like that yuck feeling. And what's great about me is I like to then do something about it. And I also tend to do this thing where I'm like, well, if I'm going to tackle this thing, what would be the most uncomfortable version of it? Because I better, like, this is where my efficiency, I think, comes in. Like, better be efficient about it, right? Like, what would be most uncomfortable? So I'm like, okay, dance. What would be most uncomfortable? Okay. Well, if I combine that with like sexy dancing in front of people half naked, that would be the most mortifying. And it wasn't so mortifying that I was like, I'm going against all my values or my boundaries to do this thing. It just felt really uncomfortable. It brought up a lot of discomfort and insecurities. And so I'm like, oh, burlesque. I think that's what it needs to be. So I remember Googling burlesque in Vancouver, found a class, signed up, and it was like the best thing I ever did because it busted so many old beliefs of mine that you can't be intelligent and sexy. You can't, you know, like if you're awkward in something, you can never change. Like so many things it busted for me. You know, it was, I have one day we'll talk about this, I'm sure some more, but body image and weight, like how many years that I ate baked chicken and roasted vegetables to fit into skinny pants. And I was at a time in my life then that I was like, no more. I'm not going to do it. And it was great because I had to dance at Celebrities Nightclub in front of, I don't know, was it 500 people, 1,000 people? I have no idea. In some lingerie set with sequins all over. I was the sugar bum fairy from
so
the
cute.
Naughty Nutcracker. And it was so neat to notice my internal way of thinking that said, you know what? You are not eating baked chicken and roasted vegetables for this performance. You're going to eat whatever you want and things are going to jiggle however they jiggle. And that's okay. And so just so many things shifted from that 12-week experience and that one performance. It was great. So, yeah, I don't suck at dancing anymore.
No, you don't. That was such a good time, too.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It was also, I was afraid to tell my mother. I was like, what would my mother think? Jeez.
Mm.
And I don't even think I told her. I didn't, certainly didn't tell her about it during the 12 weeks. I didn't tell her about the performance, but I think one day I sent her the short video clip. I don't even think I said I'm in it. I think I just sent it to her. She's like, oh, that's you. That's great. And she was so pleased for me and happy. And that was a really interesting experience too, to let my mother in on a part of my life that I would have previously been so afraid that she would judge me for it or have all sorts of fears and worries about it. And I was wrong. Like, she was actually delighted. And lovely. That was nice.
Surprises. They
yeah.
often do.
Yeah. Right. So.
We know.
So that's the thing. I sucked at telling my mother what I was doing in my life. Yeah. That too.
Great.
And because I was afraid of her judgment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big one. I think dancing is a big one for people. And also, of course, sharing anything with mothers can be challenging for people. The dancing. So for me, is it that I suck at it or it's just timing? I think I have trouble even with the wording suck at things, but I would have been able to rattle off a billion things I sucked at like 10 years ago, but I just have a different mental framework now. So it's like, I suck at being able to embody movements randomly on command. Mm-hmm. I'm good at following choreography on command. It's very easy and natural for me to copy people's movements, no problem. Mm-hmm. The idea of me dancing just for fun, like sometimes it'll come up some kooky, crazy thing, but I'm thinking specifically about conscious relationship training and dancing, which we all refer to as sexy dancing. And one time the teacher was like, you know, you guys are all calling it sexy dancing. It's just dancing. Like you're projecting all sorts of crap on this exercise. And it was true, you know, we're either feeling like we need to perform. Like I have visions of being 10 at the Gateway Theater in Richmond and my tap dancing recital in sequins like a little sailor. It's either I'm performing for parental approval, or we're doing some sexy thing to try to make X, Y, or Z happen.
Yeah.
That's what I have trouble with. But what's truest for me is that every now and again, I'm seized with dance and I'm just like in my own world and I'll dance for 5 hours. And obviously I'm very connected to the spirit of movement, which isn't there for me all the time. So I guess I suck at connecting with movement when I am pressed to do sexy dancing in a class.
Yeah, I can see the difference because when I think about you and what I know of you, like you're very good at the spirit of movement and that's what dance actually is, mm-hmm. right? Following the energy of movement. Yeah. And yeah, who says we need to be good at following someone's demand of us to dance in a certain way at a certain time? That doesn't feel good.
Well, and really what's the energy? Like the energy during those exercises that I'm talking about, it's not just the energy of movement there. It's the energy of everybody's weird anxiety that's happening right now. And the spirit of movement that creates for me is I would like to leave now. You know, not like I'm feeling like moving my body. It's like I'm feeling like moving my body out the door. I remember when Heather and Brooke Yancey, who runs dance schools and retreats and things, came into yeah. one of our women's groups and did a dancing workshop for us. Mm-hmm. And I remember being mortified, but also hopeful because I could sense there was something they could show me that I wasn't aware of yet. And Heather just told us, like, feel the movement you want to make. And my body, and I've heard my mom say this exact same thing, right? And she's like, well, the movement is to sit down. I'm like,
yes, the movement is to sit down.
And not move at all, you know? Totally relate to that. But Heather was like, what does your body feel like doing right now? You know, maybe it's a pirouette, but maybe it's just like swaying. Maybe your arm needs a stretch. Like any movement your body wants to make right now, you can call a dance. And I'd never heard it framed that way before. I was like, oh, well, I definitely want to like stretch out a hamstring right now. that's movement. Ta-da. So easy.
Yes. Yes. And like these people, you know, Brooke is amazing. So anyone who needs to, or not needs to, wants to practice movement and embodiment, Brooke is fantastic. And someone I also love is Elia. Elia was like so instrumental for me in learning how to connect with my body and movement. Like what you described as dance just now, like that's how he shows you how to connect back into this thing that we've all deemed ourselves either not good at, great at, it should look this way, you know. He's wonderful at helping you connect to your body and movement and find joy in that.
Yeah.
And so I actually did a workshop with him in Vancouver. And then luckily, I mean, what one of the lucky things out of COVID was everyone started doing everything online. And he's actually based out of Seattle. And he started offering classes online. And I was like, yes, I knew I met you for a reason. And working, like being guided by Elia to connect with my body and movement and joy absolutely changed my life. And it actually, the intensity of our work together came right after Daryl died. And I remember, like, I had no more tears to cry. Like, I had cried so many. And I luckily have so many people who I can talk to who are well trained to, you know, help support me through grief. And then also just friends who, you know, are very loving and open to hearing my whole spectrum of feeling. But I knew I needed something else. Like, I knew I needed movement. And working with Elia, he had a program on at time called 40-40, 40 days of movement, something like that. I don't know. And I think I danced with him 4 days a week. And it was so instrumental in being with grief, my grief, and shifting energy, where I didn't have to talk about it with anyone. No one had to know if I didn't want anyone to know. If I did, there was room for that. But it was just a time to like open up the channels, let energy flow, let tears come if they came, and let smiles and laughter come if that came. And so movement is so crucial for well-being, and joy is so crucial for well-being. So
it is.
Thank you, Elia.
Yeah. And so the old part of me that just says, screw you, has arrived here now. And
I like that part of you.
Oh, thank you.
Fell in love with that part of you.
Thank you.
Because that part of me was very weak,
right?
And hidden.
Yeah, you were attracted to my outward screw you. So for me, like, and you're, again, this is you being so good at the doing and me having been stuck so much in the thinking, right? So like, I would listen to you talk about the importance of movement and I would be like, great, amazing. I'm going to do that intellectually. And, you know, this is one of the ways that we can identify objectively that you're a sporty person. So I want people to pull this out, things that they're naturally drawn to. You know, you would go, okay, I need to do this movement practice. I would be like, I need to sit down. That's how you know you're a sporty person. And I am not really so much a sporty person. But I really want to reiterate how crucial the movement is. And I want to talk to the people right now who have the screw you in their mind about it, or who want to intellectualize these practices instead of doing them. It's the difference between book learning and practical learning. Your body has this energy trapped in it. And I know that can sound woo-woo, and like that's the kind of thing I would have just totally dismissed before. And it is so true. There's movement will cause state changes, energy changes. It'll give you new ideas. Like, you have to do these things to make these changes. And they're life-changing things. Just a bit of movement can take you somewhere that you never would have been before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. I love your screw you energy. and that you are an ambassador for all the people listening who also think, screw you, Georgiana.
Yeah. You know, okay, I went to a grief release ceremony the other day. And it's funny because I saw the ad for this thing. And a lot of the things that appeal to me deeply are quite woo-woo. And I have to make them make sense in an intellectual way, or they already have to make sense in a way that I can jive with my brain. So I saw this thing advertised and I was like, yeah, this is in the wheelhouse of what we do. I appreciate the sentiment, but this looks woo-woo. Screw this thing. Forget it. And then my next thought was about a woman who lives here on the island as well. So I had the screw you, this event thing. And then I was like, oh, lovely woman. I know her. And a couple days later, she messaged me like, have you heard about this event? I'm going to go. I'm wondering if you're going. It's like, oh, well, I saw it and I ignored it. But then my next thought was about you. And now you're sending me a message about this thing. So I guess I'm going to follow this and I'm going to go to this event. And for the first 20 minutes, half an hour, I felt really judgmental. I felt like this is a woo-woo festival of granola, and I don't know if I can be here. These are not my people. This is not my event. I'm going to stay because I've paid for the thing. But wow. And then luckily I've done this kind of thing enough that I was like, oh, there's that. The old attitude adjustment is needed. I'm noticing my attitude is not the best right now. I'm like, it's a standard practice for me being in a workshop like this. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to check myself and feel my bum and look around at all the people and remember what my purpose is for being here, regardless of how I'm interpreting what people are saying. And, you know, it ended up being a really, really great event that included a lot of movement and a lot of screaming. There were elements involved. So they had earth, like an actual pile of earth. Okay. They had bowls of water. Yeah. They had a fire that was being tended to the whole night that you were meant to scream into if you needed to. And then just drums, 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 and movement and movement and movement. And I mean, good luck not letting things come up. I think that's a lot of reason why people don't move sometimes, is that whether they know it or not, it's going to cause energy to move. It's going to cause an emotional upheaval.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when I hear you describe it, I'm like, sign me up. Where is it? Yeah. I want to come.
You can. They do it every month. That's why my voice is cracky still.
Fantastic. I'm coming. Sure. Yeah, that can feel scary to have things bubble up because we're so used to being on lockdown, tense, rigid, right? Stationary.
Yeah.
And that's why even like, you know, I don't think, yeah, we've done these practices like where I ask people to like look around, go find something that's a rectangle. Like that might not seem like a big deal, but that's movement. Right? Normally, if I wouldn't have asked you to look for a rectangle, feel your butt on the chair, you probably wouldn't have made that movement. You wouldn't have made that opening. Like the chest opens up when you turn and look. Right? And then we're like giving everything that's inside a little bit more spaciousness. So like, if you don't want to woo-woo dance and scream into a fire for 2 hours, you could just feel your butt on the ground and like look for a rectangle behind you. Yeah. That's movement. Yeah, I've noticed too, you said this a few times, that you don't really resonate with the term I suck anymore. And I feel the same way. Like I used to really resonate with it. Like that's how I saw myself. And it would be either I suck at this or I'm good at that. And even the things I was good at, I wasn't really good at giving myself credit for. So there's that, another topic. But now I'm like, I'm learning, I'm discovering, I'm having fun. It's nice to be tuned into that instead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like, here's the example that I use all the time. Maybe I've already said it, but I like to think about Albert Einstein. And I like to imagine him crapping all over himself for not having understood advanced physics when he was a baby. Suck, little baby.
Yeah.
We're not very nice to ourselves, you know?
We aren't. Well, we're learning how to be nicer to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And like, that's the joy of watching the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the adults now are beginning to make that shift and they're wanting that for their children. And so they're raising them in that way. And you're seeing kids who have a different energy about them. They have a different belief about themselves and what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
My kids have had ski club the last 4 weeks at school. And one of my oldest, his friends, was telling me about the latest run he did on the week or on that week. He's like, yeah. And then we went on this, I think maybe it was a black run. I don't know. And I just ate it. Like, I don't even really know that slang. Apparently that's when you like, I don't know, he like face planted or I don't know what, basically like some sucky thing happened. But he was like, yeah. And then I went off this and then I just ate it. And like, he just laughed about it. It was like, no big deal.
Oh,
and like, great. No one teased him about it. You know, my kid was there. Like, they were just like, yeah. Then he just like, whatever, face planted. Then we moved along. And those moments bring me so much joy because I'm like, oh, it's changing. Things are changing. Kids are able to say, yep, that happened. Dust myself off. Try again.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Man, that is a big shift. I remember when I first started doing this work and the ways that I would think and talk about myself. And at whatever point those shifted, I started recognizing that language in other people. It's so common for us to talk about ourselves like we're just pieces of shit and like we're commiserating about it. Like, oh yeah, you know, I suck at that thing and gosh, I should have done this or that. And at some point it started to hurt. Like,
yeah,
the ways that I would have gotten on board with that kind of conversation. Now it's just like, ooh, that hurts my heart to hear you talk about yourself in that way. You know?
Yeah.
That's an incredible shift.
The words we use internally in our minds to speak and think about ourselves and the way we talk about ourselves to other people, they're so powerful. And one of the most powerful exercises I think we walk people through is to be able to just practice saying, I suck at this, right? And just notice how your body feels. And then practice shifting the language. And again, notice, you know, what if we change it to, I'm learning to, I'm becoming someone who, right? I'm practicing. And every time, like without fail, when we walk people through that exercise, their whole body posture changes, their energy changes, their breath changes. You can sense this tenderness that they have for themselves all of a sudden, like be present. And they're shocked that just a change in the words, nothing's happened to your skill and ability level in the 2 minutes it took or the minute it took for us to do that. And yet you feel completely differently in your body about yourself and about what's possible.
You've made all the space in the world in that moment. You know, it's gone from being, I have to be good at this thing and I'm not, to I don't have to be good at this thing and I could just try to have a good time or a neutral time or every other option is opened up. You know?
Yeah. It's so fun to see. Learning. The latest thing I'm learning is pole dance and it's so fun.
Amazing.
I love it.
Yeah.
And yeah, the progression I've seen every time I go, the fun and joy that I feel every time I go, I would not have gotten to experience that if I was letting that fear of looking silly, not being able to do it. And looking silly to who? Who's judging? Who determines what's silly and what's not? Right? And I'm just really happy to be living differently now and giving myself room and permission and opportunities to follow my excitement and try new things.
Yay.
Yay.
Great. Yeah. Like, what are ways we could increase fun in our life? It's a great place to start.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that so much.
What's, I want to finish off with, what is something that you're learning these days? Like a fun thing that you're learning?
Learning, lots, hard to, describe. I'm getting a bachelor's in metaphysics. So I'm learning right now all about spiritual masters, which is always interesting to me. Mm-hmm. I am also a new Aquafit regular at the pool. So I'm not really learning much there. Although it was something like, I remember when I started going, I wanted my housemate to come with me. And there was something with like, I can do anything if I'm with a person, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think this partly stems from having been so solo as a child. Like I always just want to have a person with me doing things. But I had resolved to go to this Aquafit. And when she couldn't go, I was like, God damn it, I have to go by myself. And everything in me wanted to not go, but I did. And I had such a great time. So I think I'm...
Why did you go?
Why did I go? Okay, because A, I really like being in a pool. And I know I like organized, copy my body movement activities. Mm-hmm. And because I had said I would... like I had said to myself, like it was something that I had really decided on. Mm-hmm. And also I'd ordered a new bathing suit. But I think what I reconnected with was my joy of interacting with strangers. Like I love connecting with people. And I actually love doing things in the world by myself. I have a neat experience. I have a good time. I like talking to people and they like talking to me. And
yeah. It's fun. You're so, I don't know if good is the word. Like, I love watching you be with people because I feel that part of you that loves talking to people. Mm. And what's, and you have such a big heart for people. You feel for people so much. And it's funny because how I got to know you initially, that wasn't my impression of you. Like in my mind, like how I labeled Steph was like, Steph doesn't like people. Like I knew you were nice and you were kind and open with me, but like I would have filed you under the category of like, doesn't really like people, would rather just be left alone. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. So to see how much delight you experience even talking about interacting with people, but to actually see you with people is such a, you know, gift to watch that shift happen.
That's so nice. And, you know, I can only really access that now because I'm not so busy with my own anxieties, with caretaking other people, with needing to appear a certain way. Yeah. And also like I need and want a lot of alone time. So my ability to be like, thank you for this conversation. I am complete. Goodbye. Is a real gift. You know, I get along really well with engineers. I've got some engineering type friends and I have a friend who's a nuclear physicist and he'll phone me and ask me for like social tips, like how to things. He's like, I notice a lot of people at my work. We have a conversation, but then we want to be done, but we don't know how to end it. Or like, what do I do? And I was like, well, you can just say, you know, this has been great. Thanks for the chat. Gotta go. Oh, so simple. Great.
I love that you shared this piece because you are, like I've learned from you, you are very good at expressing where your limit is. Like, okay, I'm done. Not interested anymore. See you later. And like, it's not personal. It could be taken personally by someone who makes everything personal, but it really isn't. It's just that you're finished. And that's such an important thing for us all to learn because you're saying my ability to experience joy and delight with people, which is also a true part of me, is possible because I'm willing to set the boundary of when it's enough.
Totally.
Yeah.
And to prioritize my solo time. Which I think a lot more of us need solo time. And we don't do that very well. Like, we're scrolling on our phones, we're put upon, and we're busy. But being able to acknowledge that for myself has really opened up my energy in ways that were super important. So yeah, I want to encourage people to take time for themselves for sure.
And I want to encourage people to try AquaFit.
Yeah,
because it's so much fun, because I don't think you can be angry or in a bad mood while you do AquaFit, especially deep AquaFit. I don't know if you've tried that yet, where you put this like floaty belt around you. And I went, I'm going to give a shout out to Simone, our friend Simone. We went together one day because we like being active, and, you know, we hadn't seen each other in a while. And we said, let's go to AquaFit. I think we were trying to go do something else, but didn't work out. Climbing maybe. And we went to a deep AquaFit. Neither of us had been, I don't think, or it was a long time. And everybody who was there was, I think, significantly older than us. They were so joyful, right? And we couldn't help, like, we were howling with laughter the whole time. It was like laughter therapy. And you get to go back to the innocence of being a child. Of just playfulness, being silly, splashing. I remember there was one move where I think we were singing along to YMCA. And so you're like doing the Y thing. But like the whole time before that, you're using your hands. We're using our hands to keep us afloat. And you get so enthralled in the music and you're singing along. And you're like, why? And then we notice we're like, I'm sinking. And like, there would be a moment of panic of like, oh shit, I'm thinking. And then we'd look at each other and like just start howling. And I think everyone that had been there was like a regular. So they had already experienced that long ago, that initial sinking panic. And they just had a great laugh at us as well, laugh at us with us. But really, if you need some laughter in your life, it's a great place.
It is. It's so much fun. Pool noodles slipping out from under you, flying through the air. You get to splash your neighbor. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good place to wrap up. And I would like to wrap us up with a laughing exercise. Are you okay up for this?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I have a caveat, okay. A request.
Yeah.
May I please go pee first?
Yes, you may.
Because laughing in this is not going to go well together, because I've already been like, I think I can handle about 2 more minutes on this podcast episode. Then I got to tell her I got to go to the bathroom. So I'll please hold.
Please hold. Thank you.
And we're back.
I was thinking that was such a great example of putting in a boundary and a request in order to serve connection. Because I wanted to laugh with you. I also knew that for the last couple minutes, I'm like, I'm going to need to go to the bathroom soon. And I was like, I think I can hang on. It's not too uncomfortable. And so I'm like, I can hang on until we wrap up. And then when you said, I like to do a laughter thing, I'm like, I cannot possibly not go pee and do a laughter thing. Like, that's not going to end well.
Yeah.
Even if I can hold it in, it's going to be really uncomfortable. And I'm going to be so present with that discomfort that I'm not present with you at all or the laughter element. And for me, it's just a good reminder of noticing what we need and speaking up for it. Because there would have been the old me years ago that would have been like, let's just white knuckle our way through. It's fine. I'm fine.
Yeah. Amazing. So,
yeah.
Just a shout out to everyone on earth who's ever peed their pants from laughing too much. I've done that.
I certainly have. Those are the best laughs. The best.
Amazing. Okay, so this exercise, our friend Joel sent me this from some Instagram thing, and it's absolute gold, and I'm delighted. I'm going to use this everywhere. So, and I want everybody who, if you're in a position where you can laugh right now as you're listening or watching, please do. So you're just going to repeat after me, okay?
Okay.
Ha.
Ha.
Ha ha.
Ha ha.
Ha ha ha.
Ha ha ha. Ha 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 ha
ha ha ha ha ha.
Oh man.
It works like a charm.
I remember you said that to me and I was like thinking about it, not exactly having a screw you thought that you had the other way around, but I was like, does this actually work? And then I thought about it intellectually. I'm like, no, I think it actually would work.
I can imagine it might work. Maybe we'll find out one day.
So now I have found out.
Great.
That I am learning to keep track of my ha ha ha's according to your pacing on your fingers.
Amazing.
Thanks, Joel.
Yeah, thank you. Wonderful. Is there anything else you want to say before we sign off today?
Just let yourself have fun. Play. Let yourself dabble. If you've never really let yourself dabble, let yourself commit to something and master. If you've had a history of dabbling and there's actually something you feel excited to really get better at and more experienced and more practiced in.
Oh, yeah. You could commit to listening to this podcast every week. Doing
if it brings you joy.
And yes, only if it brings you joy. I hope it does. thanks, Gigi. Okay. Bye. Well, that's it for now. So like, follow, and subscribe. And if anything we've said here today has been helpful for you, please share with somebody you care about. We'll see you next time.
Please do the laughing. Please do the laughing thing with someone. Maybe you can link that video to the show notes.
Oh,
that
should. Would be great. Yeah. Okay. I'll do that. It's amazing.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I love you. Bye.
Bye.